Welcome to another DEI episode of The Conversation on Coast Community Radio. This is our live call-in show. My name's Graham, and I'll be your host today. Diversity, equity, and inclusion. Let's continue the conversation. The number is 503-325-0010. Let me see if I can't get your gears turning, get your thoughts flowing, and get your fingers moving towards the keypad to dial the phone. Let's start off with a little bit of vocabulary. At the station here, we've been working on diversity, equity, and inclusion training. And our program director, Emily, has been gracious enough to start an email thread almost every day called WordNote. And don't tell the BirdNote folks. That's internal only. But let's go through diversity, equity, and inclusion. This was our word note from July 6th. Diversity is the representation of varied identities and differences. This could be race, ethnicity, gender, disability, sexual orientation, gender identity, national origin, tribe, caste, socioeconomic status, thinking and communication styles, etc. Collectively and as individuals. So the representation of varied identities. This is representation, diversity. Moving on to equity. Equity seeks to ensure fair treatment, equality of opportunity, and fairness in access to information and resources for all. So fair treatment. Inclusion builds a culture of belonging by actively inviting the contribution and participation of all people. Actively inviting all people. Diversity, equity, and inclusion. So how does this apply to us? This is a complex and ever-evolving thing, and all three concepts need to be considered in relation to one another for any of them to be used effectively. Justice is often included as a fourth check and balance. We can use these when we look at our staff, our volunteer, our board recruitment processes, as well as when evaluating our programming as a whole. And so Emily continues with a breakdown of these concepts, framing it as a conversation between them, as opposed to trying to use them as standalone approaches. Diversity asks, who is in the room? Equity responds, who is trying to get in the room but can't? Whose presence in the room is under constant threat of erasure? Inclusion asks, have everyone's ideas been heard? Justice responds, whose ideas won't be taken as seriously because they aren't in the majority. Diversity asks, how many more of pick any minoritized identity? How many more of that group do we have this year than last year? Equity responds, what conditions have we created that maintain certain groups as the perpetual majority here? Inclusion asks, is this environment safe for everyone to feel like they belong? And justice challenges whose safety is being sacrificed and minimized to allow others to be comfortable maintaining dehumanizing views. The number is 503-325-0010. We've got a caller ready to go. We'll get to you in just a sec. We've got two open lines, so give us a call. How has this entered into your life in the last few days, weeks, or months? First caller of the day. Hi, good morning. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, good morning. I work at a local big box store, and I'm really disappointed at the amount of people that aren't wearing masks. It's just totally disrespectful. And at the same time, there's boats selling seafood off the dock in Warrenton. None of them are wearing masks. I believe it's an order by the governor. They're illegally selling fish off the dock, very unsafe. I just don't know where we're headed. I talked to the city, and nobody seems to care or be ready to step up to the plate, and I believe our city of Warrenton is putting our health at risk. And that's my comment for the day.
Well, thanks for that call. We're definitely in uncharted waters here with the requirement of masks and the unease that people feel. And as I've said in other shows, I always welcome a change of topic, so I might get back to DEI, but let's chat about the masks for just a second. The number is 503-325-0010. When I started hosting this show, I think the first topic that I did was us versus them, and the politicization of media, the polarization of people over ideas. And I feel like this is the issue around masks and coming together as a nation and approaching this issue collectively. This is a really good, and by good I mean bad, example of what that divide and conquer approach can do to a culture. We've got another caller. Hi, go ahead.
Hi, my name is Robert. I'm in Ocean Park. My comment on diversity, years ago I was teaching a class in Hayward, California, and a co-ed came up to me and just oozing about getting engaged over the weekend, and she was bragging about how they shared the same interests, the same music, the same food, the same stories, the same TV programs, the same everything. And I had to deflate her balloon a bit when I said, if the two of you are exactly alike, one of you is unnecessary.
Oh, Dr. Robert.
Yeah. Well, that's true, though. We need diversity because sameness is boring.
True. Hey, is this a good time to tell you how much I appreciate the contributions that Michael reads of yours on A Story Told?
Thank you very much. I'm glad to do it.
Yeah.
That's it for me.
All right. Keep up the good work.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Bye, Robert. All right, we're going to dance around this morning, but let's get back to diversity, equity, and inclusion. Another thing that the staff has done was we attended an excellent webinar yesterday. The host of the webinar was Lanisha Duke, and she's a local South Clatsop County resident, and her talk was called How to Talk About Race in Rural Communities. And I really appreciated her perspective. She encourages us to reduce the use of labels, get rid of the labels, get everybody under the same umbrella so that we can stand together against the rain. Labels aren't your identity. And another thing that really stood out to me in her talk was she asked the question, what do you want to fight versus what do you want to build? And that's something that I've wondered about a lot. Say, for example, the education system. Do we want to fight the negative changes that have happened to it over the years to make it the arguably failed system that it is today? Do you fix it? Do you fight what it's become? Or do you build something new and try to move forward from there? And so Lanisha encourages us to build a community table rather than banging your fists and asking elected officials to do something or to make laws, because the laws aren't going to do any good if we're not a community. If we haven't built the community, then the laws are not going to matter. So I really appreciated that idea of what do you want to build versus what do you want to fight? And that makes me think a lot about Facebook too, which is something that I question the value of. I know that there are groups that I'm in on Facebook that I would probably miss if I left Facebook, but I think there's a lot of negative aspects to it as well. And I just see a lot of angry comments, and Lanisha also encouraged us to drop the anger and replace it with compassion and grace. We've got another caller. Hi, you're on the air. Go ahead.
I'm on the air already?
Oh, that's you. We're fast today. Yep.
Oh. Hi. Hi, Graham.
Hey, Victoria.
First of all, Lanisha does not live in South Clatsop County. She's a North County girl.
North Tillamook County.
Huh? North Tillamook.
Thank you.
Yeah. Hold on, I got a cough. She lived here for a while, and then she went to Utah for a brief period and found that a challenging environment. And coming back. So that's really great. She married a man from Wheeler a while back. So the two of them, of course, have raised eyebrows because they're not the same skin color. But I wanted to go back to something else you talked about, building something new instead of, you know, trying to attack what's been there. Way back in the 70s, the Archdiocese of Portland had four what they called mission schools, you know, run by the Catholic Church in Portland. One of them was in the Buckman neighborhood, and I was friends with and greatly admired the principal, Sister Mary Louise Volk. And her idea was create an educational model that was different from what public schools were doing. Buckman was a, you know, low-income, working-class neighborhood, and the school was open to anybody and had no religious instruction, but focused on, I guess what we would now call individualized education. And she was hoping that by having a model in that neighborhood of a different way of educating kids, that Buckman would adopt some of those ways of approaching education, which is what happened. Eventually, St. Francis School closed, and a lot of the parent strength, interest, involvement transferred to Buckman. So she had figured out, and she said pretty in a straightforward way, that sometimes you just cannot reform an existing entrenched system, but you have to start something new. And so that's just an old piece of history that supports what Lenita has to say. So anyway, I'm glad you went to that. I totally lost it in all the email stuff I've been getting. So I didn't hear the webinar. Maybe I could see it another time. Anyway, that's it.
All right. Well, thanks for the call, Victoria. Bye.
You bet.
So continuing to talk about some of the things that we've gone over here at the radio station as a staff, Joanne Rideout, our news director, has been working through the social justice textbook called Is Everyone Really Equal? An Introduction to Key Concepts in Social Justice Education. And so one of the things that she brought up in staff meeting last week was some of the areas where it's easy for white people to not have any real clue about the history of institutionalized racism in our country. And two of the areas where that has raised its head in a very ugly and destructive way is both in housing and in employment. And so when suburbia was created, black people were explicitly excluded from being able to buy affordable homes, even though they could certainly have afforded them. And so this is one of the things that's led to a lack of equality in equity between races in America. And so white families over generations have built equity as homeowners, and this wasn't possible for black people. And that equity is what funds the next generation's college education and good food and, you know, access to resources, access to extracurricular activities, and then in employment. One of the studies that she talked about was that applications were submitted with different names, and so the resume read the same as far as education, ability, experience, but the names were indicative of a white person's name or a black person's name. And I don't have the exact percentage, but overwhelmingly, white names were called back for interviews, and black names were ghosted or turned away. And so these are things that we don't really talk about or learn about or know about. And obviously, police brutality is another one of the glaring examples of where this country's history of racism has really reared its ugly head. 503-325-0010 is the number to call. This is a live call-in show, and we've got three open lines. How are you feeling this morning? I think the question that I want to ask you now after going through my bit is, what have you done in the past few days, weeks, or months to educate yourself? What have you learned? What stone have you uncovered in the light that is being shown on this current issue? And as I mentioned before, we can always digress. But thanks for tuning in this morning to the conversation on KMUN. And we'd like to hear from you. Maybe we'll take a little music break. You're listening to The Conversation. This is our live call-in show, and we're talking diversity, equity, and inclusion, as well as the occasional comment about the coronavirus. And we've got another caller. Hi, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Thank you, Graham. This is Jim.
Hey, Jim.
Hey, you know, it's really funny. I graduated from Camas High School in 1961, and I don't recall ever hearing about the internment of the Japanese during my education, if you call it an education.
Yeah, we don't like that part of our history.
I know it. And things like that are just swept under the rug. You don't even know it. You're not taught that. And I was astonished. I was probably, I don't know, well into my 20s possibly before I ever even heard of that. And I thought, wow, how come? And I had actually been stationed. Actually, the first I heard about it was I was stationed with the Marine Corps in Iwakuni, Japan in 1963. And I was there when Kennedy was assassinated, actually. And the old Papa-san, the Japanese gentleman that took care of our squad bay, he'd come in and make our beds. Everybody in the barracks contributed for him. And he had grown up as a second-generation Japanese in the Sacramento Valley in California from Japanese family that had large farm truck holdings. And during the war, he was shipped off to Hawaii. And after the war, they tried to go back, and their land had been taken and not returned to them. So he said, well, screw this. So he moved back to Japan for the first time in his life and spent the rest of his life in Japan. I thought, man, how wrong is that?
So is there anything, Jim, that really opened, you know, that's one really good example. I think the example that comes to my mind was when I read Howard Zinn's People's History of the United States of America. Are there anything you can point to that can help, you know, kind of open folks' eyes as a resource?
You know, I think by actually having honest and objective news, stay away from Fox, for God's sakes. You get, you know, and maybe the ultimate left-wing ones, too. I don't know where. We used to, on this radio station, we used to have an Al Jazeera presentation. I don't know if it was every day or not, but Al Jazeera came in. We had a half hour or so of unbiased news from Qatar, of worldview news of things going on. And I don't know whatever happened to Al Jazeera, but that's gone. It came off the air quite a number of years ago now. But that's the kind of sources that we need to be hearing about, not Fox News, not CNN, and all that stuff. It would be really nice if we could get that back so people get an objective view rather than a subjective view of what's going on.
Yeah, it's hard to call Fox News. It's infotainment.
It is. It is. And the people that actually believe that are just troglodytes. I mean, I hate to say it because there's probably people listening to this conversation right now to think Fox News is just handy-dandy and right on and all that stuff, and probably don't want to be called or even realize that they have the potential to be described as troglodytes. But come on, you know?
Yeah, and NPR is National Propaganda Radio, right?
That's what I listen to. But yeah, but and you can tell the bias in the questioning.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, but it seems like it's a little bit more objective than the Fox News, which is totally spun out of control to the right. So
accountability in the media, and especially in the news.
Yeah, and it's just pity that they have to go offshore to get it. And it's even more of a pity when it's taken away, so we don't even have that option anymore.
Well, I'll look into what's happening with Al Jazeera these days. Maybe,
do, please.
Maybe we can find a spot for it.
Again, thank you for the program, Graham.
Absolutely, Jim. Take care.
You bet. Bye now.
Got another caller. Hi. You're next.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Is it me?
Yep, that's you. Good morning.
Okay, good morning. I'm calling because I'm one of these people that does not have the internet. I do not have TV, and I've been listening to the OPB station, and they have so many programs where different people are interviewed, different authors. Sometimes you find out that they are black people. They're more articulate than the idiot in chief. And I have learned so many things that I never knew. I used to wonder why I didn't see black people at the beach. I thought they didn't like the water. I find out they were never welcomed. I've heard about the stories of all the talks that a mother has to have with her young black child so that they aren't damaged by the police. But so OPB has a lot of programs where you can learn a lot and get a lot of list of authors that you can look up and learn more.
Awesome. Well, yeah, I mean, stay tuned. I wanted to let the audience know about a show that we're going to run this Monday at 9:30 a.m. Our own Roger Rocca, who's an Astoria City Councilor and longtime KMUN programmer, former board member, former board president. Roger Rocca hosts The Human Beat, and his show, he interviews four of his black friends, and they don't pull their punches in this episode, and I really encourage everyone to tune in Monday at 9:30 for Roger and The Human Beat. On KMUN, not on OPB.
Right. I know who he is, and he's very good.
Yeah, he's great. Well, thanks for that advice, and I'm glad that you're learning new stuff, and it's a process right now.
Okay, bye.
Bye. Okay, next caller. Hi, you're on the air. Are you there?
Hello, Graham.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning. It's Roger.
Well,
I just called in to hear somebody tell me I was great. I love it.
Yeah. What are the chances?
No, actually, you just talked about the program. I was just going to mention to you that we do have a good discussion coming up on 9:30, and it's with some people that many of the people on our listening audience would be familiar with. Denise Reed, who's the director of the North Coast Corral, and Berenice Jones-Centeno, who's the executive director at the PAC and the founder of Cascadia Concert Opera. A man named Charles Withers, who lives down in Cannon Beach. He's a semi-retired businessman and a longtime political activist. And then a young woman named Amber Duffy, who you probably encountered at some point at the Blue Scorcher in the months past. But it's a pretty, sorry about my dog, pretty straightforward discussion about what it's like to live in a black city. And these are folks that he may not have had that conversation with directly. And so I think people will get something from the program, and I really appreciate them sitting down for that informal conversation. We did it on Zoom, so the sound quality is not as crystal sharp as it would be if we could do it in the studio, but I think the program is well worthwhile.
Well, hopefully KMUN listeners are getting used to the sound of phone patches and Zoom Zoom shows and stuff.
Yes.
Roger, I did want to give a little bit of a teaser about the show. I listened to it yesterday. Can I just quote one thing that
Of course.
I think it was Berenice said. She said that white people need to talk to white people.
Yep.
And in our rural community, that was one of the things that Lanisha Duke talked about, is that, you know, Tillamook has like a 0.019% black population. And so how do we do the work in our community? And it is by talking to white people, and it's not by preaching to the choir. It's by talking to the white people that don't see things the way you do. And so we're getting close to the top of the hour, but one of the questions I wanted to ask folks that are listening is, you know, what is an encounter that you've had where you've had to tell someone that that joke was not appropriate, or that that action was racist, or that I can't be your friend anymore? You know, like, have white people been talking to white people, and have we been having these hard conversations, or are we just kind of talking amongst ourselves?
Absolutely. That's a great question to ask, and I hope it makes us all think about that, about what we have done or should have done in a particular situation.
Well, Roger, thanks for the call.
Okay, thanks, Ryan.
Okay, next caller. Hi, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hello?
Hi.
Hi. Thank you, Graham. I love this show so much. And oddly enough, I was just watching this film called Crash, and it's the most powerful, beautiful, heart-wrenching film about racism and how we all intertwine. So I just wanted to suggest to everybody to watch it, Crash, C-R-A-S-H.
I remember when that came out. That was a difficult movie to watch. But
oh, my God. I've been crying forever. And I just now turned on your show. I'm like, how crazy is that, that this is what you guys are talking about? But it's powerful, but so moving and so poignant to where we're at right now.
So the movie Crash. Thanks for that recommendation.
Yeah. You're welcome.
Have a good
day. Take care, and thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Lots of calls coming in. Thanks, everybody. Next caller, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hello, is that me?
That's you.
Hi. I have two thoughts. One is our the group of people of color of diversity here in the county is a Hispanic community. And I think that in so many ways now, with Trump as president and his anti-immigration thing, they're really keeping a low profile. And that distresses me. And the other comment I want to say about the housing stock in the hands of Black Americans was severely targeted during the 08 housing crash. I mean, before that, when the mortgage people went after those people who had houses and sold them really bad mortgages, and then they lost their housing. And a lot of it was inner-city property that I'm sure was used well by developers to have their dream projects and make lots of money.
So it happened several decades ago, and it happened a few years ago.
Yes, yes. My brain isn't the greatest today, but I just wanted to say those two things.
Well, keep fighting the good fight. Thanks, Susanna.
Great. Okay. Bye-bye.
And another caller. Hi, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I don't know if any of your listeners heard that Lawrence O'Donnell had read the transcript of George Floyd and his death, at his death. It was the most of the anguish of Black people, of generations of Black people, crying out to white people to just listen, and he apologized for being Black. He just kept apologizing to us.
It's horrible.
So it was amazing. I mean, it was just so. Anyway, I just wanted to share that, and because I think if anybody has the opportunity to look at that transcript, it is just every Black mother's cry. So, thank you.
Thank you. I read the transcript, and it's horrifying. Let's see. I've lost track of my phone patches. Are you there? That was Gwen. Hi, are you there?
Yeah.
Good morning.
Me?
Yep, go ahead.
Oh, good. Hi, this is Anthony.
Hey, Anthony.
Jim tickled something on me that I didn't know about until I was probably in my 60s. I was raised in an Italian-American community in New Jersey, and I came across something in a magazine about a documentary called Prisoners Among Us, and it's about the Italian-American and immigrant Italians' experience during World War II. There were internment camps. There were tight controls on Italian-American citizens' movements. Some Italian-American citizens were taken to Oklahoma and put in camps. I didn't know anything about this until I was an adult. It's a fascinating documentary, Prisoners Among Us. So our history, you know, we don't really teach our history at all. We, you know, gloss over things. I'm reading a book now called The Republic for Which It Stands. It's the big, thick thing, about 900 pages, and it starts the day.